Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Just coming in, at least four people have been fatally shot in a Northern California agricultural area about 30 miles south of San Francisco. A man suspected in the killings is in custody, according to authorities and local lawmakers. One more person has died after being shot at a Monterey Park, California dance hall near the L.A. area, bringing the total to 11 people. The suspect next entered a dance club on Saturday in Alhambra, but a man took the gun from the shooter before he could open fire. Los Angeles County Sheriff Robert Luna.
The firearm, which was wrestled away from the suspect at the Alhambra scene, was a 9mm caliber semi-automatic MAC-10 assault weapon.
CBS's Chris Van Cleve with more.
Investigators now believe the suspect was manufacturing weapons at his home. As the investigation continues, they are trying to piece together the motive here. We know they are looking at jealousy or a potential domestic dispute that could have been contributing factors.
Deadly shooting at an educational program for at-risk youth earlier today that's affiliated with the Des Moines, Iowa school district. Des Moines Police Sergeant Paul Parizek says this was definitely targeted.
The officers at the scene did perform CPR until the medics were able to get him up to the hospital. Those two people, both students, are dead now at the hospital.
An instructor has been seriously wounded and three suspects are in custody. The Justice Department has won a conviction against one of the most recognizable defendants in the U.S. Capitol attack. CBS's Scott McFarlane reports.
The jury here at the Washington, D.C. federal courthouse convicted Richard Barnett of Arkansas in less than 3 hours on all federal charges. Barnett is arguably one of the highest profile U.S. Capitol riot defendants for putting his feet on a desk in then Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office and of stealing mail. He faces sentencing in May.
Barnett says he will appeal. Lawyers for President Biden are keeping a lid on the details stemming from Friday's FBI search of the president's Wilmington home beyond saying six classified items were removed by agents. CBS's Stephen Portnoy reports.
A spokesman for the White House counsel's office spent 35 minutes on a call with reporters.
We're just not going to comment on that.
But he declined to answer key questions. Ian Sam cited the ongoing criminal probe.
You know, we don't want to be saying too much about the underlying investigation.
Sams wouldn't even say who's paying the president's personal attorneys.
On that, I'm going to have to refer you to
But he did say of the president's decision to offer the FBI a chance to search his Wilmington home.
It reveals how seriously the president is taking this issue and how actively he is cooperating with the ongoing investigation.
Stephen Portnoy, CBS News, the White House.
This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matinee with your headlines. Invasive crayfish species, which were illegally distributed to Wisconsin pet stores between 2017 and 2019, have now been found in the wild. The Wisconsin DNR contacted the distributor APET Incorporated more than once, telling them their actions were illegal. The company delivered over 800 invasive crayfish to Wisconsin customers over those 2 years. Red swamp, mini orange, and electric blue crayfish are native to the southern U.S., but not Wisconsin, and can damage native plant and animal populations. The company charged with 147 citations. The DNR hoping this case will deter others from breaking Wisconsin's invasive species laws. Starting this summer, UW Green Bay will begin offering a training program for caregiver supervisors. The program will offer free tuition to about 250 people. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
Our guest is Kristen Elfheim, who is the state Senate candidate for District 19 in the Fox Valley.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
There are really good people that have been in Madison on both sides. And if we're not letting the strongest problem solvers win, we're making a mistake.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24-7 at waukradio.com.
We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, find it interesting. The first club out of the bag that Republicans pull out is, hey, we've got to save that Social Security. And how are we going to save it? We're going to save it by destroying it, of course. We're going to push the retirement age off. In fact, I was reading this story over, I think it was over at the F Channel, where they were saying, you know, hey, sorry, but, you know, we have to raise the retirement age. We don't have a choice. We got to do it. It's got to go to 70 or 75 or wherever the number was. And immediately my mind goes to, do you remember last week in France, where they talked about raising the retirement age from 62 to 64, and they were literally shutting the country down? It's kind of what we need to be doing in this country if we're going to save Social Security for working people. I know the Republican fix. They've got a Trust Them Act, and I trust that they're going to destroy it for you and me. And here to share some thoughts on how we defend and hold on to our Social Security, I've asked Alex Lawson to come talk with us. He's the Executive Director of Social Security Works. SocialSecurityWorks.org is the website. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So the frame, you think I'm off base here? The frame is, you know, we got to save it, Alex. We're going to save Social Security, only we're going to make sure that nobody gets it.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing Social Security needs saving from is the politicians who keep saying they want to save it. I'm serious. They're the biggest threat to Social Security by far and away. I've spoken to a lot of media recently because, right, the debt ceiling is happening. The Republicans, as you said, out of the gate, they're like, yeah, we're definitely going to cut Social Security. That's what we do. And not you, but the media, you know, the corporate media, they're like, where did this come from? And I have to restrain myself in those channels. But here I'm like, what do you mean? This is what they always do. Just because you don't listen, you know, like, or you listen to Glenn Kessler in the Washington Post, who literally this cycle, this election cycle, fact checked Patty Murray, because Patty Murray said that her opponent wants to cut Social Security. And Glenn Kessler rated it false because the guy said that he wanted to restrain entitlements. And I'm like, oh, so if they don't literally say the words, I'm going to reach my hand into your pocket and steal your Social Security benefits. You just have to be like, I don't know. I don't know what their plans are. They're not clear about it. It's ridiculous. They say it every day. And it's not like some random. I mean, the random ones definitely say it as well. But we're talking, Rick Scott wrote it down in his platform, right? Ron Johnson said, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this every year. I'm going to take a hatchet to Social Security. Every single one of these guys is in some way said, because they have to. And you know that, Rick. They have to make their bones on killing Social Security. Otherwise, the billionaires who actually call the shots won't give them any money.
Yep.
That's what it's all about. Their billionaire funders demand this of them. So when the media is like, where did this come from? I'm like, it's written into their heart. They carved it into their heart. Ever since Francis Perkins and the New Dealer created Social Security, the Republicans have been trying to destroy it. They fought the creation of it for decades, right? I mean, it was only in the crisis of the Great Depression that progressives were able to create this. And so it is the thing that they do. It's their North Star and constellation of bad ideas. Their North Star is destroying Social Security. It's so important to them that they're using holding the world economy hostage. They're saying, we're going to literally blow up the world economy unless you cut Social Security benefits.
Yep.
I just want to like...
No, it's important to point that out. And the other part that's important to point out is Social Security has nothing to do with the debt ceiling. It's by law. By law, it cannot add to the debt or deficit. It cannot do that. And yet, again, as we've been saying, very telling that this is the first club out of the bag. Kick working people while they're down. Take what little that working people have. And look, if Social Security's got problems, we can solve those problems pretty simple. My view is scrap the cap. Make sure that Bezos and Buffett and Gates and Musk, they pay the same percentage that I pay.
Absolutely, on all of their income. And you know, Social Security really doesn't have a problem. America has a problem. It has a billionaire problem. It has a rich people don't want to and do everything. They will rip this country apart rather than pay their fair share of taxes. And they got all their wealth from this country, from the public resources and investments that we've made. You scratch a billionaire and you're going to find that there's upward redistribution of wealth that's putting the money in their pocket. They didn't build it. I mean, Amazon, you said Bezos. Do you remember how Amazon was created? They just were like, oh, it's on the internet. I guess they don't pay sales tax, right? I mean, like that was the whole thing. And it just bankrupted all these mom and pop stores because they're like, wait, why do we have to pay sales tax? And I mean, like, this is the world that we live in where you have case after case after case. I won't just go through them all, but these billionaires, you know, they have to pretend like they created all of this when they didn't, through some trick of greed, luck, you know, I don't know.
But it plays that narrative.
Lack of moral focus. But then for some reason, where they always come down on is like, and that's why we have to destroy Social Security. And I do have a theory on this, Rick. I think it's because Social Security works so well at doing what it does that it embarrasses the entire worldview, so-called philosophy of the conservatives, right? That government can't do anything, that the people can't do anything by standing together and having the government work for us, which it is, you know, and they say, oh, the private industry could do it better. Private industry looks at Social Security and they can't, you know, Wall Street is the private industry here. They just can't keep their greedy hands off it. They want to steal all that money. The private industry cannot do what Social Security does. And that's why I think the billionaire class hate it so much, is it puts the lie to their whole thing. So yeah, Social Security doesn't need saving from anyone other than the billionaires and the politicians who do their bidding. But it certainly does need protecting from them, because as we've noted a few times, This is the biggest weapon in their arsenal, is holding the debt ceiling hostage. And they're doing it to demand cuts to your and my Social Security,
while simultaneously saying that they want to raise prices on everything 30% by this scam of a tax code that would cause massive inflation. I mean, you know, I was having a conversation with a guy over the weekend. I said, you know, if the Republicans get their idea, because you go, I'm all in favor of a flat tax. I go, do you know what they're saying? They're saying they're going to raise the price of everything 30%. The vast majority of working people do not pay 30% in federal income tax. That means massive, massive tax increase on working people. And, well, you know, huge cuts on the very wealthy, because they don't consume at the rate that working people do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a, you know, that one I can see like a little bit how it confuses people, because our tax system is really not well understood. But when you explain it like you just did, I mean, you can watch people. They're like, oh, no, I don't want to do that. I want the rich to pay more in. And you're like, that's not this. This is the opposite of that. That is, we need to increase our progressive income tax on billionaires. We need a wealth tax. We need to bulk up our estate tax. I think that there should be somewhere close to a 99% estate tax on estates over $5 billion. That level of wealth is very destructive to the fabric of our nation, to civility, to the functioning of our country. And an estate tax is super fair. It's not even on a person. It's on a thing that doesn't exist if there's not a functioning state, the estate. So there's so many things that we can do. The big problem, as you know, I think I've said it, we're sort of dancing around it, is that the corporate media is the billionaire class, right? Like, it's the same thing. So everyone's getting their information from the billionaire class, and the corporate media is like, oh, we don't know. We have no idea where all these problems are. Who knows how to solve it?
Yeah. And you're it's amazing.
You. Yeah. You are the guy dressed as a hot dog being like, we're all trying to figure out what's happening here. And so it's so critical that your voice is out here, and we need to make sure that we tell this story. Republicans are coming for your Social Security. If we stand together, we will defeat them like we have before.
There you go. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Alex Lawson. Alex is the executive director of Social Security Works, socialsecurityworks.org, the website, if you want to check out more on what they do. Now, interesting, you point out how simplistic the messaging is. I mean, because you've got it right. The message is very simplistic, but they use simplistic messaging as well. You know, people are living longer, Alex. You can't be sucking off the government teat for 20, 30 years because people are living longer. So the natural reaction is, of course, we have to raise the age that people are going to be able to get Social Security so we can make it further down the road without actually looking at what that would do to society and the kind of pain and suffering that it would cause for working people. And I come back to, Republicans do this knowing the pain and the suffering that their policies cause, because that's the point. The cruelty really, really is the point.
I agree. I think that their policies have to, like, to really be a banger in the policy realm for them. It has to be both cruel and stupid, right? It has to be really cruel. It hurts the people that it's, you know, that it hurts people. And then stupid, it has to, like, not do what it says it's going to do, right? So when they break things, when they, you know, break the post office, the postal service, or try to, that doesn't make mail work better. You know, it's not like, oh, yeah, that added things to the system. When they break public education, that doesn't help things, right? It's the exact same sort of motivation as when corporations say, oh, yeah, just give us the monopoly here and we'll pass all the savings on to the people. You're like, how many times do we have to go down the same path? Before, and the answer is, unfortunately, it's a dynamic system. It's, we have to fight this fight every time. And they have simple messaging, and I do think that the left oftentimes doesn't. But, you know, we can do it too. They want us to work until we die. People don't want to work until they die. So their ideas are deeply unpopular. I will also say, on raising the retirement age, to be the sort of too complicated, I like the pithy one. They want us to work till we die. But also, it's just a benefit cut, because the retirement age isn't when you actually retire. It's just the age at which your full benefits are calculated from. So each year from it, if you retire early on Social Security, you have a 7% benefit cut. If you retire later per year, you get a 7% benefit increase. So all they're saying, without saying it, because they're cowards who won't tell the American people what they want to do, is the proposal to raise the retirement age, which is actually the full benefit age, to 70, is a 21% benefit cut. A 21% benefit cut. That's what they're proposing. And then if you ask the real dummies in the Republican study caucus in the House, they're proposing the 75 age, right? The 75-year age. It's a 56% benefit cut. I mean, like, what world are these people on? And I'll tell you, they're on an unaccountable world. Because if the American people knew that that's what they were proposing, we would see 2 million people in the street like France had when there was a proposal to raise their retirement age. I think 62 to 65 is what I'm pretty sure that they were talking about in France.
Yeah, 64. 62 to 64, just 2 years. And look, the reality is we're still 3 years beyond what they were proposing, and they're fighting to hold on to it. And this is where I keep coming back to. As working people, we've got to be acting in our own best interest, because Social Security, whether you like it or not, is the best anti-poverty program that has ever been passed in the history of society, in my view. This is taking generations of seniors out of poverty, out of eating cat food, out of living in destitute lives, and giving them pride and dignity in their final years. We should all want that.
Absolutely. And I mean, the system works so well, not just for people who retire, but definitely for people who are lucky enough to retire. That should be our goal. We should all want to have some years where we're not working, where we're not, you know, grinding out the living. That's possible in the richest country on earth. It's also possible to have disability insurance, which is what Social Security also is. People face a life-altering accident or illness in their life. They can no longer work. Social Security is there for you. The breadwinner in a family dies. The minor children receive Social Security benefits. It's there for children who lose a parent.
That's something that Paul Ryan and I share.
And all of that is done with, I know you know this, but less than 1% administrative costs to administer the whole system, a universal system that's there for all of us. It insures all of us right now against these things. And that's, Wall Street looks at that and says, man, I want that money. We would definitely charge 30, 40% on that so that I could get another yacht. And that's what Social Security represents to them, a threat, because it works. Everything that works, they hate. They like chaos and things that don't work. They come after public education because it works. They come after Social Security because it works. That's the billionaire's game. And, you know, I do think it's a lot to do with the corporate media is why we don't have as much organized resistance, and we don't see, protest movements as large as in France. Because they muddy the water. They really have made an art out of lying to the American people about what they are trying to do.
The other part of it, Alex, is, you know, I've had a number of people tell me that, oh, you're just going off about this. It's never going to pass. So why are you getting all upset? I'm getting all upset because they really want to do this. This is on their wet dream bucket list. They want this more than anything. And yet it keeps coming up over and over and over again to where eventually, someday, they're going to get it.
Yeah, and I think there's a, you know, our whole system is pretty ridiculous. You know, it's like people are told like, oh, well, this just passed, and they mean passed the House. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's got 55 in the Senate, but it doesn't beat the filibuster. Oh, well, the parliamentarian ruled it out of order. Like, all of that is to make the system so incomprehensible that, you know, people have to be in Washington, D.C. just to follow along. So I don't think that almost anyone recognizes the magnitude of the threat that they're using, the holding the debt ceiling hostage. And strangely here, because it is the billionaires who generally are always in charge of the tax on Social Security. You can watch Financial Press right now. They're the only ones who understand the magnitude of, the holding the debt ceiling hostage. They're saying, well, give the Social Security threat cuts, because if the debt ceiling is breached, you know, global financial meltdown. They're the ones who understand the magnitude of it. And it doesn't have to pass. You know, it doesn't have to do all of these. When we were trying to pass lowering drug prices, for example, right? Like, how many iterations did people hear about and not understand as it got watered down and down and down? Well, that's why this is such an important setup for them. And they basically have one, maybe two in an administration where they're not trying to pass something. They're holding something hostage that if it doesn't happen, the whole global economy blows up. The magnitude would be larger than the Wall Street caused collapse in 2008. That's what we're talking about. And I do agree. There's this wonderful, it's an inability sometimes of the American people because they're like good and great, right? They go out, they work hard, they follow the rules. And you tell them like, hey, the Republicans really want to destroy Social Security. And they're like, no, I don't think that it can't be that bad, because they can't conceive of that, right? Because they're like, no, I would never. What do you mean? Grandma loves it, or my mother loves it, or I love it. Like, they can't conceive
yep.
of the greed and evilness that it would take to actually try to push this plan. So it's like some sort of decency trap. The American people just can't believe, because they're very decent, how indecent so many of these politicians and their billionaire paymasters are.
No, I go back to it. The cruelty is the point. And you know, taking this away would just... Mind blowing. Last question I've got for you. How do we fight back against this? What are the marching orders for people when they wake up in the morning, and what actions should they be taking?
So we've come at it with two main strategies here. One of them, the Republicans are attacking Social Security. Do not let them hide from that. So we have a tracking team up on the Hill, which is just producers with cameras. And we're asking every Republican that we see, you know, how big are the cuts to Social Security that you're talking about? And we got pay dirt with this guy, Rick Allen from Georgia, who was like, I want to raise the retirement age. And we will just keep doing that, exposing the Republicans. But people can do that as well. If you have the ability to talk to your elected representatives who are Republican, ask them straightforwardly about their plans to cut Social Security. And expose the Republican plans to cut Social Security. That don't let them hide. The other stream is to demand that the Democrats pledge absolutely no cuts. And we did this previously in 2011, the last time we faced this threat. We're going to get every single Democrat on record saying no cuts to Social Security or Medicare. And that's not that hard of an ask. I mean, like, obviously, morally, ethically, they should be there. But politically, President Biden has said that consistently and loudly the whole time. So all we're going to be asking Democrats to do is just get to where the president is. And we feel like we can get the entire caucus, 100% of the Democrats, to take a pledge that says no cuts to Social Security and Medicare. And at the same time, expose the Republicans that that's what they want to do. And what we think that'll do is it'll squeeze some of those 18 Republicans who are in districts that Biden won. And remember, we only need to switch about 5-6, depending on the day. They have to vote with the Democrats, and then we can move a clean debt ceiling raise. So those two streams, holding the Republicans accountable, not letting them hide, and then demanding that Democrats take a pledge or promise not to cut a single penny from Social Security or Medicare. And we're going to be running campaigns on both of those. So you can follow us, follow that. Go to socialsecurityworks.org, sign a petition. You'll be right in the thick of things there. We're on social media, SSWorks on Twitter. You can follow along there. It's a distributed action as well, because you can call your elected representatives who are Democrats and say, hey, take this pledge, promise not to cut Social Security and Medicare. If they're Republicans, get them on the record about their plans for Social Security.
No, it's something we've got to fight for. And, you know, as you're talking, my mind's going to this place of, you know, what does this country look like without Social Security? What does my life look like? When my mother passed, when I was 13, my grandparents were able to take care of me because of the Social Security survivor benefit. My grandparents were able to live out their lives with dignity in their homes because of, you know, their savings, their union pension, and Social Security and Medicare. So a world without these things, I don't know, back to what you said a moment ago, that I don't think most people can, you know, with their brains, you know, being good, decent people, can imagine a country without them. But yet we've got a political party that, you know, as I say all the time, Republicans hate working people. Just look at what they're doing. This is what they're really trying.
Absolutely. They are. And I mean, the world is easy. You can read about it. 1 in 2, 50% of seniors lived in poverty. There was a poorhouse in every single state in the country except New Mexico, I think, because it was sparsely populated. Never figured that one out. If any of history buffs are your audience, I'm always interested in why no poorhouse in New Mexico. But everywhere else, there are poorhouses. That's where working people who exhausted their wages, their savings, and didn't have family to support them, that's where they went. They were locked in. These are debtors' prisons. Social Security and Medicare erased the whole concept from Americans' brains. We don't even know that there were poorhouses here. There were in every single state. That's the world that the billionaire class, they pine to return to that. They pine to return to a time when working people had absolutely no shot. You know, now we have, maybe there's a small shot, but for a life where you can retire with dignity.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
CBS News Special Report. Two deadly mass shootings in California within days of each other. In the Half Moon Bay area south of San Francisco, a San Mateo County official says four people have been shot to death at a mushroom farm and three have been killed at a trucking business. A suspect is in custody. The White House says President Biden has asked federal law enforcement to provide any necessary assistance to local authorities. This follows the killing of 11 people late Saturday at a ballroom dance hall in Monterey Park near L.A. CBS's Chris Van Cleve.
Those killed ranged in age from their 50s to their 70s, including 65-year-old Maymay Nan. Fonda Kwan is her niece.
Shot her first and then proceed to go inside to shoot everyone else.
The suspect went to a second dance hall, but a man wrestled a gun away from him. The suspect was later found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna.
We want to get to the motive. We want to know what the heck happened here. The only way we're going to get there is through a lot of very hard detective work.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Wisconsin State Supreme Court race could determine the future of reproductive rights in Wisconsin. More than 1,000 people marched to the state capitol in Madison yesterday. It was part of a nationwide commemoration of the U.S. Supreme Court Roe v. Wade decision that legalized abortion 50 years ago. The Marquette poll shows 55% of people in Wisconsin are against last summer's ruling striking Roe down. One of the FBI's most wanted suspects is dead. Guards at the Milwaukee jail found Octaviano Juarez-Coro's body in his cell yesterday morning. Juarez-Coro spent years on the run after the execution-style shooting of his wife and four other people in 2006. In sports, the Bucks are at Detroit tonight. The Badgers travel to Northwestern. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
What are the governor's priorities for Wisconsin? Tony Evers will lay out his second-term plans during his State of the State address January 24th. You can hear it live on your local Civic Media radio station. Will abortion rights, Medicaid expansion, and legalizing marijuana be the top issues? Your favorite hosts also provide insight by breaking down the governor's address. The State of the State address live Tuesday, January 24th at 7 p.m. here on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
It makes me smile, and you have a piano, but if you can play the Peanuts theme song.
Oh,
oh my gosh.
You know he can.
Yes.
On the Devil's Radio.
Yes. Yeah. I love it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday nights, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
...ism for unions that are organizing at Starbucks, Amazon, McDonald's, etc. Why not a Wall Street banker union? Solidarity forever, brothers and sisters.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I saw a what is kind of, you know, disgraceful, disgusting. Trump spoke over the weekend at the funeral of Ainitha Lynette Hardaway, otherwise known as Diamond, half of the Diamond and Silk duo, rambling on about how the length, the service was too long. So said it was only going to be like 15 minutes. He didn't want to sit there for 3 hours. It brought up tons of old personal grievances. I mean, just bizarre ramblings that, you know, no rational, sane, decent person does at a funeral. Even someone like the Diamond here. Now her other half, her Nitha Rochelle Hardaway Richardson, she, who again Trump claimed that he had never met, interesting. She had her own kind of weird remarks as well, claiming that, insinuating that her sister died because of the COVID-19 vaccine. Now, they're both anti-vaxxers. It's been widely reported that, you know, unfortunately, you know, Diamond here, you know, passed because of COVID. But to now come around and say, you know, it was because of the spike proteins and the jab. So either one of two things. Either they were complete frauds and liars and duping people to be anti-vaxxers while they got vaccinated, or she's just total full of, you know. Either way, interesting times. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make? Did you see the speech that he gave at the funeral?
Well, yes, and what he did, you know, Silk, of course, Diamond Silk, and a lot of people know them. They were definite YouTube personalities. And
they blocked me on Twitter.
You know?
Yeah.
And Silk, of course, went on and on about how much she really loved Trump and all the great times they all shared together, she and her sister and he. And then he got up after she said that and said, you know, quote, I knew Diamond, but I didn't know Silk at all. I just learned about Silk. You're fantastic. I don't know what to say. I'm lost. I'm just lost for words. And then he also went on at the funeral about some political issues.
Yeah.
Now, I've been to a lot of funerals over the years, and I would say, you know, 99% of them, when you have somebody speak that is, you know, celebrity or political celebrity or whatever, they in particular tend to say the right things at a funeral, you know?
They stay on top.
They tend to do that.
Yeah.
He went to this funeral of two people who really worked for him very hard. You know, they used their style and way and humor, but they worked for him and were African-American, you know? And he went there, and I know he knows them. You know he knows them. What would possess him to take that tact at the funeral? And also, you don't get it. Don't go into issues
and grievances. I mean, it was the same kind of campaign grievance stuff that you go, who does this at a funeral?
I don't know. Well, Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's crazy. But expected, you know, I'm not really surprised at it. Not surprised at all. In fact, not surprised at anything he does. I guess he's going to make a surprise trip to New Hampshire. Also looks like he's going to dump his Truth Social account, going back to Twitter and Facebook, I guess.
I'm going to say once again, he will never, in the end, run. It's not going to happen.
You don't think he's going to, at least, you don't think he's going to run and try and beat up on DeSantis?
No. I think before they get into the convention, Donald Trump, there'll be a reason that he will not run. He will not go into the convention for a vote.
Oh, of course not. No, not that.
My prediction in February, then he announced. The day after he announced, that's still my prediction, and I've been holding to that since February.
Yeah, because we'll see.
Because I credit this, of the way I feel about this, over one factor that I may be completely wrong on, but I think this funeral proves it, amongst other things. It's due to ego. Deep in his mind, somewhere, he knows that he can be beaten a second time.
And he would be a loser. And that's
and he would be a two-time loser. Yep. And you know, it was stolen twice. And I it's not going to happen. He has deteriorated, you know, his base a lot. A guy today was over, stopped me and asked me about the document stuff, you know. And this guy had been a Trump supporter, not a like psycho or anything, but just a regular person that had decided on Trump. And
sure.
then he liked Biden, and today he didn't like either one of them, you know, basically. But a lot of people have soured on Trump. Now, that doesn't mean that they've turned to Biden, but they've soured on Trump, and his base is absolutely weakened. It has been. So I just don't think he's going to run.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how that plays out. I think he's going to get in there. He's going to fight. I think something will happen before the ultimate end of it. But I think he's going to go after DeSantis pretty hard.
I think he'll do that as long as possible for, you know, his own benefit of, you know, he's running and therefore they can't come after him legally, et cetera. But I don't think he goes into the actual convention on a head-on vote at the convention against DeSantis.
I agree. And I'm looking forward to going to the convention. Are you planning on going to the conventions?
Probably will. I went to both of them when I saw you. And I would probably go to both of them.
Yeah, we should go together.
We could do that. That'd be cool.
It'd be a good time. Have you on the program? You could do the play-by-play.
Yeah, we can do that. That'd be cool.
That'd be something worth doing. Because I'm looking forward to them. I'm looking forward to where this is going to take us. I also wanted to get your thoughts on evidently this Richard Barnett, you know, the guy who has described himself as an effing idiot. You know, the guy who, you know, got a picture of himself with his feet up on Nancy Pelosi's desk. Guilty on all counts.
Right. Were there not, what, three of them today or not?
Yeah, there were a couple of them, but he was the one who got the attention because, well, he had his feet up on Pelosi's desk.
Right. Right. And they found him guilty on 8 counts. It was strange. See, I have been in that office so many times. And it was just so strange seeing him, you know, sitting in there. I mean, it was just something that's sickening, surreal. And of course, that's the infamous photograph of him, you know, inside her personal office there. But yeah, he was found guilty on 8 counts by the jury today, and so he's got 8 federal crimes. He'll be sentenced. I think it's in May. He'll be sentenced.
Yeah.
He faces up to 20 years in prison.
And I hope he gets every day of it.
Of course, you know, when this started, they were kind of going easy, which you and I talked on your show. It would have been better if the judge would have handed stiffer sentences. That would make for more plea deals and get a lot of them more out of the way, you know, quicker. But I think enough of them have had sentences now. We'll see what happens, you know, with him. But yes, he can face up to 20 years. So we'll see what they do in May with him.
Yeah. Wanted to get your thoughts on Mike Pompeo. I've got a friend who thinks Pompeo is going to be the Republican nominee for president. Obviously, he's working towards that, the former Secretary of State under Trump. But had an interesting thing to say in his new book about Jamal Khashoggi. Basically, he was an activist, kind of the ultimate, he was asking for it kind of statement. I'm curious your thoughts. What he wrote in the book is, he didn't deserve to die, but we need to be clear about who he was, and too many in the media were not, but called him an activist. And it's one of those things where I looked at it as going, like I said, you know, he was asking for it, kind of defense.
Well, yes, he called him an activist who received too much media sympathy, you know, and that he said he wasn't a Saudi Arabian Bob Woodward. But it adds, of course, it's like you said, he didn't deserve to die. Well, that was kind of nice of Mike Pompeo to say that, at least in part. And I think he has went after Khashoggi because, first of all, Khashoggi was an American green card holder, American resident. And he also, as we know, worked for the Washington Post. And he was a reporter and opinionated writer. And his activism quote was just that he had an opinion about the royal family that wasn't a good opinion.
Right.
And that was his, quote, activism. And Mohammed bin Salman didn't like him. We all know the rest of the story. Here's what I think. I'll cut to the chase behind this. Yes, Pompeo is contemplating running, and he's putting out the feelers. As you know, he's lost, what, how much weight?
Probably 100 pounds.
100 pounds. So he's all trim, and he's down to fighting weight, et cetera. And he's written a book, because if you want to run for president or something, you know, or if you come out of prison, you write a book. We all do that.
Right.
So he's written a book. And this part, the Khashoggi part, you know why I think that's in there? Money.
Of course.
Money. The royal family,
yeah.
You know, their friends, their connections, money. Now, Pompeo is a right-wing activist who was the John Bolton type of guy. Of course, now he'll probably criticize Bolton, but he was still in the Bolton camp. So he's going to defend Mohammed bin Salman and the royal family. He's going to do that. And Pompeo would be, as president, somebody that would love to bomb Iran as soon as John Bolton, fired the missiles. He'd be there with him, to do that. But this is about money. He's trying to get on the side of the Saudis.
Going to be interesting to see what this campaign looks like with Bolton running and with Pompeo and the rest of them. Also wanted to get your thoughts on, being in Ohio, the ex-speaker's trial that's about to begin, former Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder. Federal racketeering thoughts?
Well, the whole First Energy was just a complete train wreck. And, I've known so many of these people that obviously we all knew them that were involved in this. And the one lobbyist, Neil Clark, committed suicide in Florida. He was wearing a Mike DeWine T-shirt when he shot himself, which is Neil, produced a book after that and tied DeWine into it before the election, but there were no repercussions, that directly went back up to DeWine, for the election. But I think Larry Hauser, and I've known him forever, he was a county commissioner in Perry County that I represented in Congress. I knew him his first election, watched him become speaker, watched him go out as speaker, watched him come back as speaker, and Larry and I got into it in redistricting. He got angry at me. He wanted $55,000 in contributions. I wouldn't give them. And they carved my district into eternity and forced me to make 7-hour round trips in a car just to go down to visit the southern portion. And it actually cost me my house to move, to get in the middle of it. So I've known him forever. Both getting along with him and obviously with what happened to me in redistricting, not getting along with him. But they all got entangled in this whole First Energy mess, and it's $60 million, and there's, a court system, and you're, guilty till, you're into the trial process. I mean, you're not guilty. But this is a real, real problem for him, because two or three of the people have already, Jeff Longstreth, who ran his campaigns and his money, is already pled and has turned against him. And so now Borges, the former head of the party, Matt Borges, and I think Householder, Rick, they're the two that are going to do most likely the time. I would assume somebody, I would think, from First Energy, the corporation, ought to actually be responsible, too, in the criminal process.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I'm hoping a lot of people go to jail, because Ohio.
This is a big, nasty case.
Yeah. I don't know how you became such a corrupt state. Also, I want to get your thoughts on, it looks like Sherrod Brown's staffing up for re-election. What do you think his chances of re-election are?
Well, Sherrod Brown's always been a fighter, and in a state like Ohio, which has now turned into a red state, Sherrod Brown still has the knack and the ability with his grassroots campaigning, but also his constituent service is pretty dynamic. When people would ask me, they have a problem, they would call me up and they say, who should we call? I used to tell them, call Senator Brown's office. And I would call Senator Brown's office and tell them people were calling. They were always very on the spot. So I think he's had great constituent service. He's very vocal. He makes the rounds in the state of Ohio. So I would say that he has a definite up. And he also had a very stiff challenge before when it comes to Republicans in Ohio with, you know, Josh Mandel, and Sherrod Brown won that. So I would say his chances are pretty good.
Good. And finally, I want to get your thoughts on Hakeem Jeffries. Red State, you know, the online publication, put out the blaring headline, Hakeem Jeffries defies Kevin McCarthy, reappoints Schiff and Swalwell to Intel Committee. Does the minority have to defer to the speaker when they put forth people who they want on different committees?
No, they can put onto the committees whoever they want to put onto the committees. That's the minority's prerogative, just as the majority does. Now, the majority can then say they don't want them on the committee, which has happened before under Speaker Pelosi. I didn't like it when Speaker Pelosi did it. I'm not going to like it when Speaker McCarthy does it. I can't see, unless they have committed criminal acts, I can't see where, you know, they say something even that, you know, is so offensive that they drag them off of a committee.
Yeah.
Both sides have now done it. Okay, eye for eye, they're both blind. But the minority certainly has the right to appoint, and Hakeem Jeffries absolutely should appoint. Even if he knows the Republicans are going to take him off, yes, he should appoint.
I agree. Good stuff. As always, Bob, appreciate the time.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Gonna take a quick break, right back after this. Stick around. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours, from Stitcher to Podbean and everywhere in between. There we are. Quick break, right back.
Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. If we do not risk our lives today, how do we then want one day to justify ourselves before God and our people? That provoking question was asked by Nazi resistance fighter and Catholic trade unionist Nicholas Gross. On this day in labor history, Nicholas Gross was hung in a prison in Berlin. The year was 1945. Gross worked as an underground miner in Germany for 5 years. He then became involved in that country's Catholic trade union movement. He became a leader in his union, the St. Anthony's Miners Association, where he served as the secretary representing young people in his union. He also worked for the union's newspaper. In 1927, he became assistant editor of the West German Workers' newspaper, eventually rising to the position of editor. The paper was targeted for censorship by the Nazi Party. The Nazis finally shut down the union's newspaper altogether in the year of 1938. By 1940, Gross was subjected to Nazi interrogations and searches of his home. Gross worked for the Nazi resistance in Germany. He often served as a courier between different resistance groups. In 1944, some members of the resistance failed in an attempt to assassinate Adolf Hitler. Gross knew about the attempt, but was not directly involved. He was jailed, tortured, and convicted. He was hung for treason. The Nazis refused to give the labor leader, resistance fighter, and man of faith a Catholic burial. Instead, they cremated his body and scattered the ashes over a sewage farm. In 2001, Nicholas Gross was beatified by the Catholic Church for his life of sacrifice. In Niederweniger in Germany, there's a museum dedicated to the memory of Nicholas Gross. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at laborhistoryin2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. Got an email from Jason. Jason asks, do you think the president of the United States will even allow the Teamsters to strike at UPS? I'm unsure after the railroad fiasco. Different sets of laws, Jason. Different outcomes. There's really no lever in the private sector for the president to demand they go back to work like there is in on the railroad. I mean, the different laws. The rail workers covered by the Railway Labor Act. The UPS workers would be covered under the National Labor Relations Act. Very different. The Railway Labor Act gives Congress the ability to say, no, you're going to get what you get and you're not going to throw a fit. No striking. They have that ability. Now, again, I think the president, the messaging out of it was all the wrong stuff. And I had said, you know, months earlier when someone had asked, do I see a railroad strike happening? And I said, no, I don't foresee them being able to, being allowed to strike. If they are, it's going to just be a very, very short, planned, afternoon. It's not going to be a prolonged strike because it is such a vital part of our economy. Especially coming out of the pandemic with all the things that are going on, it would be an economic nightmare. And it would be really harmful to the Biden administration if they allowed that to happen. As pro-workers they are, and look, I believe they are, they were never going to shoot the hostage. They were never going to allow that to happen. Now, do I think they should have messaged it a lot better? Absolutely. And I said from the beginning, they should have come out the next day and said, look, we're going to move legislation to make sure that workers get sick time. We're going to make sure that every worker gets sick time as a call to arms for everybody. That didn't happen. And there's a bunch of reasons for that on all sides of the aisle. Some of the unions weren't communicating. The legislators weren't on the same page. And the administration was caught unaware. They really thought that the deal was done. And a lot of people did. I had talked about it, a month earlier saying, I'm not sure. I'm hearing rumblings. But the one thing I was positive of, they weren't going to be allowed to strike. The UPS situation, a little bit different. And I've got, people emailing me all the time going, on both sides, we want to strike. This has to happen. We're going to show them. And then people on the other side going, well, maybe we not. Because understand, a strike is a drastic measure. Nobody wants a strike. It's painful. It's economic pain. It's harmful to a company. Look, I've been on strike before. The company was hurt by it. That's part of the deal. It's part of why you do it. To cause that economic pain, to bring them to the table, hammer out the best agreement. I'm hopeful that UPS isn't going to push into the place where a strike is there. And as I understand, the issues are many and varied. The economic part, especially for the part-timers, is huge. The surveillance and the harassment part for the package drivers and the feeder drivers, huge. Will there be a way forward? We're going to find out. And as I said, before, this is a moment where Sean O'Brien has the opportunity to get on that wall of legendary labor leaders by getting an agreement that's going to be transformative in the industry. And something that the FedEx workers, something that, Amazon workers of the future are going to look at and go, we want that. We don't want to be just marginal. We want to be better. And UPS is the company that can make that happen. We're talking billions and billions of profits that these workers have worked for. With UPS is one of those things, and I had someone not too long ago come on and talk about this. They don't produce anything. They don't make anything. Everything that they make, all the profits that they make are because of the labor of their Teamster members. The people out there, driving the trucks and pounding the pavement and delivering the packages, that's the business. If you're not compensating them, if you're not treating them fairly, there's going to be a consequence. And I'm still not 100% sure in either direction. And this is a good place for O'Brien to be, where the want for a strike is there. I talked to a lot of UPSers who are saying it's time. It's time to go. It's time to fight. It's time to take this to the streets. It's time to demand. And there are some who are saying, we want to hammer out the best agreement. And if striking is the option, well, we might have to use it. Don't want to. But do I think the administration is going to stop it? No. Because there are other options. you know, the Postal Service. There's Amazon, who will ramp up hugely. FedEx. There are other options. That's where the railroads, there aren't. So that's my thoughts. Appreciate the email. And if you've got questions, comments, something on your mind, I want to hear it. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast wherever you find your favorite podcasts. You'll find ours. Also, like I said, question, comment, email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.